Welcome to part two of our discussion, where we'll talk about the stability, compatibility, and safe administration of new lipid injectable emulsion and PN.
You bring up a lot of good points about understanding the products and how to use them. And, you know, I also wanted to address maybe some differences in adult versus pediatric population. And I know recently, even the Aspen Parenteral Nutrition Safety Committee just published some guidance that focused specifically on the pediatric population. So I was wondering if you could share some of the takeaway points with regards to that new publication.
Yeah, we're very excited with that. And actually, I think it's going in print today. I saw a newsletter that it's actually available. Hopefully see the print copy within a couple of weeks here in December. And so, yeah, there's a few different nuances with regards to pediatrics, one of which is they're a high-risk population. If you looked at any of our reports of safety in the past, when you look at pediatric patient populations, if there's an error made, it's more likely to cause harm in that patient population than adults. And so we try to pay a lot more particular attention to that. They don't have the luxury of, as adults do, of being able to tolerate, very low doses or no doses of that at all. And so deficiencies might be predominant as well. I think one of the main things we were looking at is when you review the order, in fact, we've been talking about that later, maybe because we've been saying for years, ever since we published the first safe practice guidelines, that the process includes order and then the order review. And that order review is done to make sure that the product is appropriate, that you're assuring that the product is clinically intended for the patient, that all the ingredients are in doses that are consistent with the patient's clinical condition at that point in time, and all the additives that's going into the parenteral nutrition product are sterile and stable and compatible for the period of time that it's going to have through its completion of its infusion. I've been talking to people, says, we've been telling people to do this order review, but we don't really have a good way of process of saying what actually is included in that review. So this one paper, we broke it out into its, and we provided the steps, we broke it out into its components, one of which is the patient identification. Who is the patient? What's their age? What's their dosing weight? What are you dosing this weight based on? So anybody that looks at that order can go back and recalculate and calibrate to assure that what is ordered is what's needed for the patient. And then for the parenteral nutrition ingredients, what's the indication for parenteral nutrition? What are the additives that are done there? What are the doses? How do the doses comply with that? And then the last part, if there's any problem with that order, that's the third part of it, is if there's any problem, what do you do about it? Who do you contact? Who's there to contact to clarify any discrepancies you have in the order that need to be corrected? And I think that's one of the big things we have there. And I think it's probably even the most critical for pediatric and neonate populations.
I know specifically with peds too, there's issues that come up from a compounding perspective with repackaging. And then from an administration, there's some specific new recommendations for children below 2 years of age. I was wondering if you could comment on both of those aspects.
Yeah, we've actually been discussing the repackaging issue. We've talked about that before, and it's a double-edged sword that in regards to what's the best way to administer lipids to patients, to pediatrics, and especially neonates. Because, with adults, we could put the lipid in the TPN and call it a TNA and do pretty well with it because it's large enough that you will handle that. But with pediatrics, the calcium and phosphorus doses are high enough that the TNA might not be stable, so it has to be administered separately. And it's mostly that separate administration of the lipids that's where the problem comes in. Well, the volume size of the products that come from the manufacturer are just too large for an individual daily dose for most of the patients that are receiving it. So a lot of the repackaging is done to minimize that dose. Because of the errors that have occurred when the whole bottle is there, it gets infused over the whole day. For multiple days, it causes lipid overdose and causes problems for the infant. Or even if the whole bag is there and something goes wrong with the infusion pump, that the whole dose gets administered over a very short period of time, it can cause a significant harm to the infant in regards to that. On the other hand, repackaging of those products is problematic in the sense of looking at dose, but also sterility as well as stability. If from the sterility standpoint, we know that lipid emulsions, if they're inadvertently contaminated, can support a wide variety of different organisms to cause infections. We know that from data from propofol, and that's why we have restricted hang times for lipids of no more than 12 hours, because that's a time point period that if there's a contamination, that an inoculant can be high enough that can cause a septic episode in the patient. And so I think that's one of the real biggest issues. But I think a concept that people don't think about, that you and I've talked about on occasion, is just that stability. If lipids are in the manufacturer's packaging and with limited exposure to oxygen, the stability of the product will be longer. If you disrupt that and put that into a syringe or something else that doesn't have the same protective mechanisms to keep oxygen away from them, there couldn't be a stability issue with that as well. And so it all goes into our beyond use dating concepts of, it's not just sterility that makes the beyond use date, but in parenteral nutrition in particular, it's also the compatibility and stability that's really a key importance. So that's a repackaging area. And then the other area we talked about a great deal was related to the information that's coming mostly from Europe. And that's the photoprotection of IV products to keep harmful products from being developed with exposure to light. And the recommendations are that for believe children, pediatrics under 2 years of age, that photoprotection is required for that population, because any of the chemicals that are produced as a result of photoprotection are much more toxic and can occur a much shorter period of time than they perhaps can do for adults. I mean, the debate is also, should we do it for all parental nutrition products? But I think that's one of the key things that at least the current recommendation is right now, until we get further information.
Thank you. I know we covered a lot of ground today with regards to the PM process. If you had kind of your top 3 to 4 messages that you wanted people to walk away with, what would those be?
I think the first one is your staff. I think you're doing your staff a disservice to have them be involved with parenteral nutrition if you don't give them formal training from a curriculum, not just going to somebody that's had experience with it and spending time with them. Because I think there's just too many nuances of the products that need to be known by individuals that are involved with the process in order to keep it safe. I think the other thing is that we really need to make a better approach towards dosing of parenteral nutrition, and realizing that what you learned from the last person that did it may not be right. And so pay attention to what the dosing recommendations are from Aspen. I think the other thing is that, we are involved with a system of a very complicated therapy. If there are errors that occur and they cause harm, or they even don't cause harm, they need to be reported. If we don't see these reports and be able to aggregate them, we can't make better recommendations for doing that. And I think the last thing is that parenteral nutrition, everyone thinks it's the same thing, and it's because they just aren't knowledgeable about it. But this process and the therapy has evolved over a number of years. When I first started in parenteral nutrition and dosing parenteral nutrition, if I dosed that now, I would be fired. because I was overdosing the patients. And so you constantly need to be looking at what your process is, how and whether you need to update it or upgrade it as along, especially with the new products that are available. You need to really pay attention to figure out where they're all going to fit in to your patient population, and then realize, you know, with the new lipid products, which one's best for our population? You know, how can it be best administered? What's the best system for them to be using for that? Who's going to be using that system? How do we educate them? I think those are the main points to look at. Whenever we see any types of errors or problems, it's because someone's taken a shortcut with regards to the systems that we already know are effective in preparing a safe parenteral nutrition. And a lot of times it happens because people are busy. One of the errors where infant died happened where a tech was asked to compound formulations and they hadn't been checked off as being competent in doing that yet. And the error was occurred and it bypassed the pharmacists that were checking it as well. So it's just attention to detail and realizing that it's a life-saving therapy. But if you don't have the systems and the competent people to perform in those systems to deliver it, it can cause a great deal of harm.
Yes, I've always been amazed, you know, that there's specific processes in all the institutions I've worked at for prescribing chemotherapy, for example. But usually anybody can write and be involved in the process for parenteral nutrition. And I hope one day we'll get to the point that parenteral nutrition is seen to have the risks and the safety issues associated with it that chemotherapy is, and that we'll be prescribing it and compounding it at that level. So, well, I really appreciate your time today, and thank you for sharing all your clinical experience and thoughts with us. Thank you.
Great. It's been a pleasure. It's always great talking with you.